I am Platt on the line. This is thecommentary.ca. Alan Gard joins me now. He's a columnist for the Vancouver Courier, appearing Fridays. He's a longtime journalist working at the CBC, Co-op Radio, and CKNW, where I first heard him growing up filling in for Rafe Mir. He is also a beekeeper here in Vancouver at his home and at various places in the city, including the new convention center, Science World, and at Van Dusen Gardens. He is also running for a seat on Van City's board of directors. We'll discuss all that and more. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Alan Gard. Good morning, Mr. Gard.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
The last few weeks with the Olympics, what were they like for you?
Oh, they were really interesting because I think I saw the city in a way I'd never seen it. Many of us ended up taking public transit. I wouldn't otherwise have done that, but I had to go downtown, and it was like a party every time I got on the bus. Instead of people being introspective and reading their papers or ignoring everyone else, everyone was chatty and helpful and who are you and how are you doing. And I had some Olympic security pass that was hanging around my neck, so that, you know, everyone said, where are you volunteering and what are you doing? So I would tell them I'm going down to visit my bees on the convention center. So there was that part. I also went to a couple of curling games because I like watching curling, and saw the new facility out at Hillcrest Park. So it was terrific. It was good.
It changes us in a superficial sort of way. Do you think it changes us emotionally or as a nation, perhaps?
I don't know. We're such a self-deprecating lot, but I think it really opened people's eyes when we won more golds than any other country has, you know, in the Olympics. All the nationalism, I guess, is kind of a mixed blessing from a Canadian point of view. We kind of frown a bit at all the nationalism we see with the United States. So, but I think it inevitably changed us. It certainly changed the city. How long that will last, we'll have to see. But I mean, there are some permanent things. We developed a whole new neighborhood. You know, the Athletes Village will become a new Southeast Falls Creek neighborhood. A number of areas got new or upgraded facilities in their neighborhoods. Hillcrest Park will have a new building. We've got a new Sea to Sky Highway. I mean, I know these are all kind of assets, as opposed to maybe touching our soul, but that certainly affects things.
Now, your Courier column that used to appear Wednesdays and Fridays, now it only appears Fridays. When did that happen?
That happened after I came back from summer holidays, and I was told that Can West decided they wanted to cut back on their freelance budget. I mean, they've been paring that back for the last few years, and I've avoided the knife up until this last round, and one of the cuts they wanted to make so they could keep more full-time staff on was to cut the column in half. So don't take it personally. We're just cutting your income in half.
Yeah, but it's still a widely read column. Like, we have people on the program who are, you know, the bloggers on municipal affairs, people like Mike Klassen and Jonathan Ross, and you know, they refer to your column regularly.
Yes, and they refer to me sometimes in not the most pleasant terms, but no, I mean, I've been covering this scene for the last dozen years, and I've been a journalist for a long time, so I know my way around and find out stuff and have a perspective that's based on that kind of history. And many of the people I see sitting at the media table at council are fairly young and new to the business and are still trying to figure out their way through an agenda. So from that point of view, it's certainly worth reading.
We just have this sort of surfeit. I mean, a couple of years ago, sites like Klassen's and Ross and Francis Bueller was at the Sun then, and there seems to be a lot more chatter online about municipal affairs. Is that your sense of it, that you see that?
There's more online, and there's far less in the newspapers. I think that that's what's happened. Vancouver Sun no longer has a permanent person that covers the hall. The radio stations don't seem to have permanent people assigned. CBC's to have Stephen Quinn on a regular basis. As you said, the Sun used to have Francis. So no one is really covering the politics of what's happening in the city on a regular basis. Francis picks up development issues mostly for the Globe, and people kind of come at it from different ways, but there are no regular full-time people to for whom that's a beat. And where it is discussed is on blogs, which is a very different kind of reporting than you would see in, I guess you'd call it, the mainstream media.
Are we more informed? Is the citizen more informed because it's online?
No, I don't. I worry about blogs because I think that blogs are, for the most part, unedited. You have no sense of what the experience is of that person, what their agenda is. You get more opinion and fewer facts, I think, and I'm not sure that's great. I do think there are more people expressing their opinion. I don't know how accurate the facts are that those opinions are based on.
How do you view the state of Vancouver as it is now? How do you think the mayor is doing?
I think he's still avoiding some tough issues, but I think his agenda has certainly captured the imagination of a lot of people. He has his detractors, but I think that he hasn't gotten into any trouble. He stepped into a serious problem when he took over regarding the Athletes' Village. I think that he and the team around him, and certainly Penny Ballum, managed to struggle their way through that and did quite fine. Then they had to face the recession like so many other governments, with so many issues that really weren't to their own making, and seemed to be doing well there with some cuts and consolidation of services. Their shared services review is still working its way through the system, but I think they're doing a reasonably good job. He's a very, compared to his predecessors, which was Sam Sullivan and Larry Campbell, he's a much lower key kind of guy and far less controversial. Some people like that. Some people would prefer more controversy. Makes for better copy, I guess. But overall, I'd say he's doing fine.
Now, you keep bees. You're I guess the city's official beekeeper, something like that, right?
Well, maybe unofficial.
Yeah. Now, there are a couple of videos of you on YouTube, and you mentioned there that you're allergic to bee stings.
I am.
So why do you do it?
I tell people that the bungee jumping class was full.
Yeah.
So I went and did beekeeping. I think I've always liked animals. Bees are animals. But what occurred to me once I started keeping bees was the tremendous impact the pollinators have on the environment. So I think, and how they're losing ground as we kind of denature our cities, it's very important to bear in mind what we're doing and why that is not necessarily the best thing to be doing. So bees kind of give me a window on the environment. They certainly contribute in a positive way to the environment by pollinating trees and flowers and make the environment just seem more whole. So that's the main reason I do it. Bees are a great talking point, too. Children are very attracted to my beehives. Whenever I open them up at Van Dusen Gardens or anywhere else I'm in a public arena, they immediately are drawn to them, and more their parents are as well. And it gives them the opportunity, and me the opportunity, to talk about the environment and how are bees doing and how's the environment doing. So I think it's a very good educational talking point.
So do you own the bees, or how does that work?
Like which bees? The ones on the convention center roof?
You have installations where at the convention center at Van Dusen at Science World, right?
Yeah, Science World are Science World's bees, but everywhere else they're my bees, except at UBC Farm, where they belong to one of the scientists, Leonard Foster, who's actually doing a project where he's looking at genetic markers to indicate disease resistance. So this is just a place where his graduate students can come and do a bit of their work and practice on dissection of larvae and so on. And I say I keep them healthy, and his students knock them off.
Yeah, I guess you don't own the bees. We all own the bees. Mother Nature owns the bees. But the installations themselves are the sort of...
I own the bees.
Oh, you do?
Well, they're domestic animals.
I guess so. You're right.
Yeah, they're domestic animals, and I buy them and take care of them and requeen them and feed them. So it's like you would own a cat,
yeah,
or a dog. I own the bees. I mean, there are many wild bees. There are over 300 species of bees in British Columbia. And honeybees are just one type of bee, and they're actually foreign to North America. They're from Europe and Northern Africa.
And do they sting? I mean, they obviously sting, but I mean, do they sting on purpose?
They sting kind of to defend themselves. Or if they get trapped in your clothing, you know, just as a defensive move, they will sting. But for the most part, bees won't bother people. They'll bother beekeepers more because we're kind of in their face, opening their hives, sometimes when the weather's inclement, and they don't really like that. But usually when they're just bopping around the garden, they're not going to bother you at all. The most likely way you'll get stung is if you're walking barefoot and you step on one, or one sitting on a railing and you put your hand on one. But the chances of a bee deliberately kind of eyeing you and then going after you are basically slim to none.
Yeah. Now, how much honey do you get?
Well, it really depends on the year. You can get up to 100 or 125 pounds of honey per colony. Or you can get nothing. I mean, last year was a very slow year in the city because we had that drought in June. We had a cold spring last year, so the bees were bringing in nectar, but they were eating it up at the same time. So it's been a while since I've had that kind of good volume. I had pretty good production out at Van Dusen, but each little microclimate is different in terms of how much production you get.
So I guess the climate at the convention center would be different than, say, at Van Dusen?
Very much so. In fact, we've put at the convention center to give the bees a hand. We've put up a Lexan wall, which is like a plastic, about 4 feet high, running on the north face of the beehives. Because if you look north from the hives, you're looking across Burrard Inlet straight at the North Shore Mountains. So there's a lot of cold air coming. And we wanted to just raise the temperature there a couple of degrees. So it's much cooler there. There's less likely to be early pollen there because of when that grass surface starts to produce flowers in the spring, and just generally when the downtown part of Vancouver starts to produce stuff that the bees can feed off of. Whereas Van Dusen is just a more diverse biosphere, I guess you could say. And also I notice, you know, our car's got a little temperature gauge in it. So yeah. I notice, for example, that everywhere my bees are is a different temperature. The coolest would be the roof of the convention center. If I drive from Van Dusen out to UBC, to their botanical gardens, the temperature generally drops 2 or 3 degrees. So everywhere is a little different, and blooming is a little bit different everywhere, too.
Now, Van City, you're running for a seat on the board. This is the first time you've sought elected office, I guess?
Well, I mean, I've served on other boards. I'm on, you know, I'm the president of the Richmond Beekeepers Association. I'm on the executive of the BC Honey Producers Association. But those aren't really, you know, big electoral battles. They're like most volunteer organizations. I'm sure your listeners are familiar with, where if you're the last person in the room, you could be next year's president. And also, please bring coffee, too.
Yeah.
You know, so there are those kinds of boards. And they do worthwhile work, but, you know, people aren't in big election campaigns trying to get those positions. So this is really the first time I've ever had to campaign to get a position. And this is a massive organization by comparison.
Now, I should note that I'm a member of the credit union. I have a very small amount of money there, probably less than about $200. But I still have a vote.
You absolutely have a vote. And what's good about the credit union is we individually don't need a lot of money, but collectively we've got $14.6 billion in assets. And so what's good about a credit union is that we can use that collective wealth to then build wealth in the community. And so whether you're, someone with $500,000 invested there or someone with $200 there, it's a co-op and each person gets a vote.
And I should note that I don't even I don't use the bank at all. Like I don't have a checking account or anything like that. Should I vote then?
What's the money there for? The $200?
I used to have an RRSP or something like that when I was a kid.
Oh, good.
And I guess I just left it there.
Well, do you get?
I took it out, and then I guess you have to leave something in there. You can't really close the account. So.
So do you still get a package that allows you to vote?
Yeah.
Well, if you're still a member, then you should vote. The turnout is incredibly low. So, I mean, that means that the engagement of the membership is very low. Only about 5 to 7% of the membership votes. There's 410,000 members. and the number of people that vote are, you know, between 15 and 25,000 each year. So it's a very low level of engagement. So please vote.
Yeah, does this
you can vote for me too.
Yeah, now does this affect your journalism work at all?
Well, that's a good question. I never write about Van City. I never have written about Van City, so I try and keep, whenever I'm on a board, I just keep that separate. I cover city politics, and while there are some relations between Van City and the city in terms of projects, I just don't cover that stuff. So in that way, it doesn't. In terms of the time consumed to do this campaign, it's like night and day, man.
Yeah.
It's hard work.
Now, how consequential is the board to, the day-to-day operations of the credit union?
Well, a board, ideally, is a strategic board that sets policy. So they shouldn't be, aside from, of course, staff implementing that policy, the board doesn't deal with day-to-day matters. They set policy and direct through the CEO, who's their only employee, really. The only person they hire and fire is the CEO. In this case, it's Tamara Vrooman. They direct her, who then directs the staff to implement board policy.
So why should we vote for you? You're running with two other people who are already on the board, right?
No, Virginia Wyler's on the board. And Heather Tremaine is on the board of something called the Van City Foundation, which deals with a lot of charitable, a lot of grants to groups. But she's not on the board, a board of directors. So she's appointed by, I think she's appointed by the board to that position as a volunteer. But you should vote for me because I want to keep the organization progressive. I'm really interested in continuing the great impact that Van City has to support everything from environmental issues to helping out women entrepreneurs, to helping people out of poverty, to supporting the arts. They have they're quite a radical group when you think about it, because they use about 15% of their money every year to go back into community grants. And no other financial institution does that. This year they'll be putting $7.5 million back into the community. So I want to keep that going. I'm also, because of my background as a labor and economics specialist, very much aware of the fact that that Van City's staff level of engagement is kind of going through the floor. It's dropped from about 75% 3 years ago down to 50%. And this really concerns me because I know if the staff is not engaged, if they're not turned on by their work, if they're not having the proper tools to do their work, then this affects me as a member because the services aren't as good. I've got a background as an accountant. I spent 5 years training as an accountant. I've sat on a number of boards, so I understand something of finances and certainly something of governance. So I've got a skill set that will work. Plus, I've been a member for 30 years, and so I've got my own interests at heart, too. I want to take care of my money and your money and our money.
Now, Charlie Smith interviewed you for The Straight.
Yep.
There's a transcript of the interview on The Straight's website. It reads as contentious, was it?
No, I don't really think so. When you're being interviewed by Charlie, you're being interviewed by someone who's quite well-researched and has a point of view that he brings to an interview, which is fine. His particular interests for that interview had to do with arts funding. And he said, we are an arts newspaper. That's how he framed The Straight. It's kind of an arts newspaper, so he was primarily interested in that area. But there are other areas that are of interest in terms of funding for Van City. It's not all about the arts.
Alan, it's been a pleasure having you on the program. As I said off the top, that I used to listen to you when you used to fill in for Rafe. And it's been nice to talk to you today.
Well, thanks for calling.
And continued good luck with the campaign.
Talk to you soon. Thanks
yes,
a lot.
You're very
Remember
welcome.
Remember to vote. Vote for me.
We'll think about it. Yeah, I mean, you know what? Maybe I will. I've got three votes, so why not? You can read him in the Vancouver Courier Fridays. VoteAction.ca is his website for the Van City Board elections. Alan Garr on the line in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Lanto.